again, Richard C. Hoagland and Mike Kaiser. I'm Art Bell. All right, Richard, you mentioned Buddhists.
Yes. I have got Brookings. I went to my vast library and found my Brookings document. I am sitting here, open to page 225. This is a fascinating paragraph, Art.
And it says?
It says, the fundamentalist and anti-science sects are growing apace around the world. Remember, this was written in 1959.
Yeah.
And as missionary enterprises may have schools and a good deal of literature attached to them. One of the important things is that where they are active, they appeal to the illiterate and semi-illiterate, including as missions, the preachers, as well as the congregation, and can pile up a very influential following in terms of numbers. See where they're coming from.
I know that if someone actually said that on this program, they'd get a lot of really nasty emails.
This is a government document circa 1959. Let me emphasize that. Here's the part that's really intriguing. For them, meaning these fundamentalist anti-science sects as viewed by NASA, the discovery of other life rather than any other space product would be electrifying. Since the main ones among these sects are broadly international in their scope and are in some places a news source, the principal distributors of mass media materials, an important source of value interpretation, a central social institution, an educational institution, and so on, some scattered studies need to be made both in their home centers and churches and their missions in relation to attitudes about space activities and extraterrestrial life. Additionally, well, we'll not get to the good part.
Okay.
Additionally, because of the international effects of space activities, and in the event of its happening, of the discovery of extraterrestrial life, even though space activities are not internationalized, it is very important to take account of other major religions. So, for example, Buddhist priests are heavily politically engaged in Ceylon. So, too, in Burma, many politically active men, including UNU, I think he was a member of the UN, are professionally active Buddhists. The Burmese convoked the Sixth Great Buddhist Council, which brought together a huge international group of Buddhist lay and ecclesiastical leaders, and it seems likely that, at least in the case of Theravada Buddhism, with the wide participation of modern educated politically active men, Buddhist beliefs and principles are being reinterpreted. We need, and we do not have, good observations or interpretive statements about the possible repercussions of space activities, etc., for these Buddhists.
Well, that's saying they don't know. It didn't say
they were astonished.
Well, they didn't say it would go further. It'd be worse than
what they were worried about was political activism.
Yeah, okay.
And
well,
they were most concerned not about domestic American fundamental political activism, but in this context of 59, they were worried about Buddhists as an example of a coherent religious political response in the international community. Now, let me leapfrog here. When they wrote this, remember how they said that these missions overseas were the centers of education, publications, literacy, etc.?
Yes.
We now live in the internet satellite television era. So the fears that they had, that the fundamentalist anti-science doctrine as they saw it would have a monopoly on their followers, on their parishioners, no longer obtains. There's a wide spectrum of communications now to these people, the same people we want to talk to. And what Mike and I are trying to do with this first conference is to get a groundswell going so people will engage in the conversation. And frankly, I think there's going to be an extraordinary conversation to engage in.
Lou in Phoenix, Arizona says, hey, Art, you know, you missed the biggest fundamentalist threat. What will the Muslims do? This would drive them insane. They'd want to start a jihad against the rest of the galaxy.
No, absolutely not so. Wrong.
Not so.
Absolutely. Mike, you want to tell them why?
The Quran, of all the three major book religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, the Quran is probably the clearest in allowing for other worlds.
It allows for ET's art, right, in the Quran.
All right. Well, then Lou's wrong.
Well, he's looking at the terrorist spin doctoring of a tiny, tiny percentage of the Muslims of the world.
Well, again...
But that would be like taking out a tiny percentage of fundamentalist Christians and making them the problem.
Right. Well, you're saying, you keep saying of every religion that the only problems are going to be a tiny, tiny percentage. But gosh darn it, you guys. I'm telling you right now, this tiny percentage, first of all, I'm not so sure it's so tiny. And secondly, they're definitely not quiet. They are the most aggressive, verbose, active people that you're ever going to want to meet your whole life. And you can't marginalize these people. I'm telling you right now.
We're not marginalized. We're talking to them.
Right? Well, but by your very statements about how small their numbers are, and I'm not even sure you're right about that.
Well, I'm quite confident in that. I mean, that is the environment I initially, religiously speaking, came from. When I use the word marginalized, I'm referring to their numbers. I'm not referring to them as people or anything like that. I mean, my concern is with the broader evangelical world. Okay, the resistance is going to be there if, as I said, depending on how it's packaged, the Christian community, the academic Christian community, and there is a very large, active academic Christian community within the evangelical spectrum, has always adapted to things like this. Let me just give you an example. The whole quantum model, the whole quantum physics thing. Initially, when that came out, it was like, oh, this is just the boogeyman. This is just a tremendous threat. I mean, once people started thinking about it, they realized, wow, you know, this can really... give us a lot of insight onto a number of theological issues. And once again, and I think this, the ET thing, if Richard's right, I mean, if this actually pans out in a reality someday, once again, I think theism can sustain this. It has sustained many things. From a theistic perspective, we believe that God is the creator. He knows how the universe ticks. We discover it. And we go on.
Well,
a lot of
this, though, gentlemen, is going to depend on how this occurs. And many qualified guests have said to me, okay, Art, fine. If we get a signal from 10,000 light years away, and that's announced to the world, the world will handle that reasonably well. Yes, there'll be a lot of speculation and nervousness and all that, but it'll be handled pretty well because it's 10,000 light years away. And we'll just have lots of questions about it, like we do about religion anyway now. However, if there's something really traumatic, like a real-time landing in Atlanta, for example, something really serious, and we're presented with the fact, for example, that we've been authored and tampered with for some time now, and
how
genetic fathers just walked down that corrugated unknown metallic thing there from the saucer and these are our fathers, these are our creators, that would not be handled so well.
Well, the first question a thinking Christian is going to ask is, how do we know that? How do you prove that? And what I usually get is, oh, well, there's the genetic similarity. Oh, well, there's a visual similarity. Oh, well, there's this. Oh, well, there's... Well, hey, we got that on the planet Earth. And again, there's a logical disconnect to it. So if there's a genetic similarity? That doesn't mean that one species created another.
There is
a significant disconnect here. But I have to agree with you, Art, that people aren't going to... I understand what you're saying. A lot of people aren't going to even ask the question, is there a disconnect? They're going to just react.
Now, I don't minimize what you guys are doing, because it is my belief that the Brookings Report governs what we do now. It governs what we're not told right now. It certainly allows for secrecy and top secrecy and levels a million times above that of things that we're never going to know about. It laid the groundwork for that. It was the baseline for all of that. And they like to keep secrets anyway. So they just will cite that forevermore, and maybe they're not wrong.
Just below the religious paragraph I read before,
yes,
there's another line that I really had not read until this moment carefully.
And it says?
Well, remember my spin on this, is that Brookings is a political document designed to keep the in-crowd in line. It's designed to keep honest scientists and bureaucrats and civil servants
yes.
from blowing the whistle
yes.
by laying out that the stakes are all of civilization and, you know, cats and dogs living together and all the other terrible things that could happen versus keeping the secret careful until the appropriate time. And they decide the appropriate time. Listen to this line. If plant life or some subhuman intelligence were found on Mars or Venus, for example,
yes.
there is on the face of it, no good reason to suppose these discoveries, after the original novelty had been exploited to the fullest and worn off, would result in substantial changes in perspectives or philosophy in large parts of the American public, at least any more than, let us say, did the discovery of the coelacanth or the panda.
I wonder how they reached that conclusion.
Well, one wonders a lot about this document because all the supporting studies they call for...
Well, one does more than wonder about it. It said some things about fundamentalists, Richard, that were just downright insulting.
Yeah, but think of the...
I mean, fundamentalist does not automatically, unless you're an intellectual stuck way up there somewhere kind of person, it called them sort of backwoodsy and not too intelligent, and I forget what it was they said in there, but... wasn't good.
Art, remember the culture of the 1950s, what was happening in the South?
Yes.
We were lynching human beings.
Oh, yes.
People were running around in sheets.
Yeah.
We just defeated a guy over on the other side of the world that slaughtered 6 million of a particular race.
That's right.
So we've come light years. I really agree with Mike. We are not the culture that spawned this document, regardless of its honesty. And we need to engage in the conversation now, not tomorrow, not next week, but now.
But you see, I don't think, but their basic conclusions were as true today as they were then. And
you
When I refer to that, I refer to the fact that society couldn't handle it any better today than it could then. I don't see what's changed that's going to allow that. Nothing's changed.
Look, I have always argued, from the moment I got into this and realized that these ruins on Mars could be real, might be real, possibly could be real, that the safest way to back down from the Brookings position
yes.
to educate the middle of the bell curve was to start dealing with the most unthreatening aspect, which to me is ruins lying on another world. Not guys landing on the White House lawn, but ruins, boys and girls, libraries, technology, wonders, medical advances.
Yep.
Do you realize that if we sent an expedition, even a robotic expedition that could bring samples back, and we went into laboratories at Sidonia and simply took the bottles off the shelf and sent them home,
yeah.
we might find the most astonishing cures for the top 50 diseases of humankind in the world,
we might.
Particularly if those folks were related and more advanced than us. The benefits so far outweigh not knowing. And if the impediment to not knowing is the political hang-up...
Okay, you know what else we might find out, Richard?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad you said that. But suppose, for example, we found out that what killed Mars and killed all the previous residents of Mars is soon going to kill us. That might be something that you might not want to put on tomorrow's Daily News headline.
Unless there's something you can do about it.
Unless there's something you can do about
it. And I have argued strongly based on the physics, remember, that's all their whole show, the hyperdimensional model, that what we are being shown, even in the layout of what they built, is an extraordinary, empowering science of energy, information, and new physics that allows us to do almost magical things.
One might ask, though, that if all that's true, then how come they're dead?
Ah, because in the theological plan,
yes,
in the flaw of the human condition, there is the awful, awful conundrum that men and women, for reasons that border on the insane, in fact, they are insane, go to war with each other again and again and again. Who is to say, in terms of Mike's perspective of the gap between Genesis 1 and Genesis 1:1, that somewhere in that gap Mars falls, and it in fact is after a fall. It's after a decrease of enlightenment. It's after a proximity to the Godhead, and that our problems can be looked at from a totally new perspective with totally new solutions based on greater insight if we only encompass the insight.
We should bring in Dave Flynn's work here.
Well, do we want to really give it away? Because
no,
we've got some cool...
Oh, yeah, we do want to give it away.
What is it? Well, what
Art is
Dave,
desperate. Go ahead.
No,
go
what,
ahead.
We want to give anything away on the show, so...
What Dave is doing is exploring, you know, Mars-Cydonia connections in old world mythology. And I'll just leave it at this.
Yes.
He would say that what Richard just said about the fall of Mars, so on and so forth, that ancient mythology and megalithic structures on Earth actually reflect a belief that that happened.
Really?
We'll just leave it there.
Remember, I had a section in Monuments, or I have a section called The Search for the Terrestrial Connection?
Yes.
What Flynn has done, and he's really done a hell of a good job, and I don't say that about a lot of people, because you know I'm really, really, really persnickety about good research. But David Flynn has done some really cool stuff, and he's on the panel. What he has got is a solid documentation of the Mars echo in terrestrial mythology, ranging from the Christian fundamental story laid out in Genesis,
yes,
all the way through the Middle Eastern, Sumerian, Assyrian, Babylonian, etc.
Once again, Richard C. Hoagland and Mike Heiser. Richard, if Brookings, just for the sake of discussion, if Brookings was right then, and they're right now, and you wanted to change that, how would you do it?
Mike, you want me to do something, or you want to do it?
Well, I'll speak for the Christian community.
Sure.
I think that the Christian community needs to be exposed, again, to what Richard's doing. And I don't want to misrepresent Dr. Ross or Paul Nelson, our other speaker. I mean, they're going to be skeptical about extraterrestrial life and from a scientific perspective. But if Richard's model is correct, especially the hyperdimensional, the mathematics and all that, that screams intelligent design. And the church needs to be confronted with that, with reality. If this is reality, the church needs to be confronted with that, and I think slowly it will acclimate, it will the mind will become open, God will come out of the box, as God has done many times within the church, and people will start to think about it and see, you know, theologians, pastors, whatnot, will start wrestling with this and articulating for the laity that theism can sustain this, and this is, you know, just one of those things. It's exciting. It means something, but theism can sustain this. So I think it's just a gradual educational process and thinking through the issues. But again, there are some, you know, non-negotiables.
the whole
creative aspect.
Yes, it's the non-negotiables.
But where... the fact that there is a non-negotiable does not damage the pursuit of what Richard is trying to do. In other words... Does everyone have to agree 100% with Richard Hoagland?
No,
to say yes.
No,
on to something,
yes,
and this matters.
But the larger issue here is not whether Richard is precisely right or wrong. It's even a larger issue. It's there probably are aliens, and if their presence,
if it, If it didn't bother Aquinas, it shouldn't bother us. People just need to go back. They need to start thinking about their theology again.
But what if, you know, I mean, the panel has to deal with what if we run head-on into a non-negotiable.
If it didn't bother Aquinas, I'll give you another name, C.S. Lewis, very common name, very familiar across Christian, non-Christian perspectives. He actually wrote a trilogy.
Prelandria, Out of the Silent
Planet. Prelandria, Out of the Silent Planet, That Hideous Strength, where he dealt with this. I mean, this is old stuff. Christian theologians have tackled.
Is our origin negotiable?
Well, theism is not negotiable. Okay, as far as what God did, when he did it, how he did it, the mechanism, these are all the things that within the scientific and the philosophical world as we know it now, you know, quantum physics, all these other different views, this is why there is diversity even within the Christian community this issue. The non-negotiable is theism, that God created. The mechanism of creation, some Christians embrace evolution.
So that's
more
or less a no, right?
Excuse me again?
It's a non-negotiable.
As far as God creating.
As far as our creation is concerned. That's
right.
Not negotiable. So that if we were to go to...
The mechanism is negotiable.
The mechanism is. So you think it's... How negotiable... Let's see how negotiable you think it is. If we went to Mars and we found out that indeed that it had been populated and there was substantial, extremely strong evidence that we are Martians, for example... Is it not negotiable?
Okay, what does the phrase "we are Martians" mean? That we're common ancestry?
That we
both descended from the same creator?
No, not necessarily. What it means is that we came from Mars. We came from Mars. Mars was dying somehow.
You haven't answered the question of how we came from Mars.
All you've done with that question is to move the who is the human species back one planet. It's
right,
the same question,
the mechanism,
which has historically been with us. It's just been moved one planet over.
Well,
we had a migration. So we had a California gold rush to Earth. That doesn't change the fundamentals. What does change the fundamentals?
But it said something about Earth being created. Not,
yeah, but Earth is an ill-defined term.
And Genesis says that God created everything in the heavenly host. I mean, you have to realize, Art, again, this is not a road that theology has not been down. The laity doesn't realize that because the laity, quite frankly, is complacent. And the negative way of saying that is they're smug. They're theologically smug. And I just think that if this is reality, and again, I'm not omniscient. I don't know if Richard's right. I look at his what he's doing as a credible attempt to try to establish this. You know, and I'm not going to compare him, you know, to people I don't think are credible that, you know, I've dealt with before. But this is not a road that theology has not been down. And if he's right, this is part of general revelation. It's part of the creation. It's part of what God did, and we need to understand it.
You want to hear something really freaky, gentlemen? When Mike and I planned this, you know, and discussed it, and he finally got the go-ahead from the university, I had no idea that the lead story in Atlantic Monthly, which is a mainstream publication.
Indeed.
They bill themselves as the smartest magazine on the rack.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is an article by Paul Davies. Now, Mr. Davies, Dr.
Paul.
Davies, is a professor of natural philosophy at the Australian Centre for Astrobiology at Macquarie University in Sydney. He's written something like 25 books. Anyway, his lead article in the Atlantic Monthly was E.T. and God. Could earthly religions survive the discovery of life elsewhere in the universe? And what fascinated me by the article, which, of course, I carefully saved as part of my arsenal when I go up against Mr. Ross and others,
yes,
are the number of mainstream theologians who, as Mike has been saying all night, have grappled with this successfully and want to know.
If all of this is true, then Brookings was wrong then and is wrong now.
I don't think
that much has changed.
It's a matter of degree. I mean, Brookings, it's not an either or. This is the either or fallacy. Either Brookings is right or it's wrong. Why can't the answer be yes? Okay, Yeah, there are people who would react the way Brookings does. I mean, that is a no-brainer. I mean, it's just they're going to be that way.
All right.
The question is how much.
If the world hasn't changed since 1950, what the heck are we doing here?
If you're if you are our government, or you know, it's hard to be that, but if you're somebody very high up in government and you're reading the Brookings report and you're considering what your policy is going to be. Or, in fact, maybe is.
See, now you're getting close to what I think is the real issue.
Well, sure.
I read you that paragraph so that you could all out there listen to the overwhelming political fears inspired by Brookings. They're not concerned about Christians believing this or believing that.
Well,
they're concerned about fundamentally religious people of many different stripes enacting their beliefs at the ballot box.
Well, let me tell you something, brother. In our Constitution, religion and the state are separated. But in reality, in politics, there is nothing at all separated. Politicians have to act all the time with religious belief in mind. Oh, you bet.
What Brookings did not forecast, which I found interesting in hindsight, is the rise of the fundamentalist Christian political perspective in the central mainstream American body politic, particularly in the 1980 election.
Yeah.
Fundamentalist Christians helped Ronald Reagan get elected.
You betcha.
They then helped George Bush get elected.
You betcha.
They did not help Bill Clinton get elected.
Right.
They were incredibly, shall we say, put off by Mr. Clinton, part of the backlash, part of the political war that we have, which is called the cultural divide, by people like Bill Bennett, is between the state of values as held by that constituency versus what they perceive to be the liberals, the Hollywood left, et cetera, et cetera. You're seeing it again reflected in the last tortured days of the California recall campaign. That divide on cultural values, I have believed for quite a while, is politically what's holding up the train here. And the only way to get past this station is to directly confront it, show mainstream Christians this is not against their religion, and in fact it could enhance their religion, but we're not going to know unless we go.
So you're going to try and demonstrate this, in essence, to the political powers that be, that they need not be afraid of this. It's going to be your goal, right?
That's our goal. And what will be the criteria of success will be if other universities pick up on this conference, if they invite us to take this show on the road to Georgetown, to UCLA, to Podunk, U in Iowa, wherever, we will know we've got something by the tail, that the interest of the body politic is bigger than the fear.
Well, I certainly agree that is your goal. I'm just thinking, though, that you're going to run into a brick wall, and you know, I could be wrong. But I don't think I am.
Hey, you've got a front row seat, my friend.
Art, one of the things, that, you know, Richard has had a lot of experience, like you said, with CBN and so on and so forth, but one of the things that I think that Richard took from Roswell, and he's alluded to it tonight, is, again, being in this environment, where you have, you know, Christians discussing these issues and seeing the openness.
Do you have that email handy from what's his name, Mike?
Which you have to give me the contents a little.
One of our panelists in Roswell wrote this really affirming post-conference email.
Oh, that was Chris.
Okay.
Yeah, I bet I have it somewhere.
If you could quickly find it, because that would tell Art a lot about how the straws are blowing in
the
wind.
Well, I'd like to invite Art to the next one. AOD 204. I know you, Art doesn't.
You might
you
not
don't do too many things, but you're.
I don't. But you might. You might not want to have me there because I really do have certain beliefs that.
Art, we had Richard Hoagland there. Let that sink in. You know, and along those lines, what we wanted to show.
The only ungodly thing, Art, is they made me get up at 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning. As I said, I've never been anywhere on a Sunday morning talking about God for many years.
Well, we wanted to show, look, it's not the Christians who have this interest that are shutting the non, you know, Christians out, or the non, you know, evangelicals, or whatever label you want. It usually works the other way around. I mean, we don't get invited to a lot of things. I've said before on the air, and I'll say it again, and I'll stand by it. Coast to Coast is one of the few shows that will even have me on. Hey, it is the other side that tends to be close-minded, and I appreciated what Richard said earlier about, you know, there is a significant section of Christianity that's used to thinking cosmically, you know, the big picture kind of thing.
That's the
so
thing.
So I'm inviting you right now, Art. I mean, come to 2004. Be a spectator, be a speaker. I think you'll be surprised.
But I'm telling you that even though this, and we covered this earlier, is a very open-minded audience, probably 10, 20 times more open-minded than the average audience for a talk radio program. But even this audience has a high percentage of people who would just utterly... I can't even know. If you could sit in my seat and read the emails, you would know these people believe what you're discussing is absolutely the work of the devil.
That's why we're devoting 3 hours to an interchange, questions and answers, panelists responding. I think a lot of that that you see in your email, Art, if I may be so bold,
from this open-minded audience,
is from the perspective of frustration. There's a conversation they have not been even invited to join. What we're trying to do is invite people to join a crucial conversation, which I think is the imperative of the entire species. It's got to be thrashed out. It has to be thrashed out before officialdom deigns to tell us. And the upside could be that if we get a groundswell going here of people who are thinking on their feet about these cosmological and theological issues, and we can create a political visibility for that, it could help advance the day when they'll finally get around to telling us.
These people would say to you, though, I don't go anywhere to negotiate my faith.
But no one's asking anyone to negotiate their faith.
I don't think they need to go any further than their Bible.
I understand. I'm just telling you how hard a mission you have in front of you. Not that you're not used to hard.
Richard's used to uphill battle.
The nonsense that's been thrown at us for the questions we have raised.
Yes.
It's time we raise serious questions so we get serious answers from serious people.
Well, one thing it will not be is boring. I guarantee you that.
Well, I am preparing a special paper. I've never done this before in this because I've never had... It has not been the time for the critical mass that I think we've now achieved.
Yes.
So I have titled my talk very provocatively for certain people, The Gods of Sidonia. Knowing that... I see you didn't look at my page. And we shall go from there.
The Gods of Sidonia.
And that is an updated title, too, the last couple of weeks.
You just threw that in to totally plaster somebody. Oh, my. Well, all right. It has been a pleasure having you both on. All right, you two. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Art.
Yes, good night. Well, what an intriguing night, and a little taste of what I guess they're going to try to do. It's probably the question to be answered, and that is, of course, how the religious world, not just the Christians, but the entire religious world, would handle the news of, and I mean the hard news, of an ET presence and perhaps something even a little further that has to do with our roots and our beginnings and all of that. Indeed, and a very non-trivial question.